This is Roger Bennett of Men in Blazers.
Hey, this is Alexi Lawless.
You're listening to the Mouths of the South podcast.
Mouths of the South podcast, right here on Dirty South Soccer.
Rock on.
Eat it up.
This is the Mouths of the South podcast.
You shut your mouth when you're talking to me.
The official Dirty South Soccer podcast.
Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth?
Talking all things Atlanta United FC.
Don't nobody understand the words that are coming out of your mouth, man.
We are
the Mouths of the South.
The South got something to say. That's all I got to say.
All right, Atlanta, what is up? We are back, the Mouths of the South, all three legs of the tripod back with you today. Myself, Sam Franco, joined by Eric Quintana and Jason Smith.
Hi, Jason.
Hi. I exist.
Jason told us a pretty funny story about his child and his mom before the podcast.
Tell him a story, Jason. Tell him a story.
So my kid's 7 weeks old today. And or yesterday, wow, days are running together. edit that out, Eric, please. Thank you. and my kid was sitting up on my mom's knee, and she started like literally straining as if an old man in the retirement home on a toilet. And sure enough, pretty soon a shotgun blast in her pants erupted, and my kid pooped on my mom. It was pretty great. This happened right before the podcast, and so we got our. This is the crazy thing about parenthood that I did not realize. You become like a waste disposal team that could rival like most hazmat units. Like we got this really fancy laundry soap that you scrub it out and you put a little Dawn dish soap on it and you scrub that into the fabric, spray it with some like Shout or some baby safe Shout type stuff, throw it in the wash, all comes out perfectly clean, and then you start the whole thing over. And we do this like 4 or 5 times a day. So I'm an expert in poop disposal now, guys. If you need some help with that, I got you.
So
We are brought to you by DirtySouthSoccer.com, SB Nation's Atlanta United and Atlanta Soccer page. Follow on Twitter at DirtySouthSoc. That's SOC. You can follow us on Twitter at MOTS Podcast. He's Eric Quintana, 47, and the other he is at Jason Issa Smith. I'm at Sam J. Franco. Don't forget to email us, motspodcast@gmail.com. So there's all the different ways to get in touch with us and everything, and we'll go ahead and dive right in today as, well, we've got some Atlanta United stuff to talk about, which is nice. We've been doing a lot of these U.S. Men's National Team podcasts based around the Copa America, but I was going to say now that the U.S. has been eliminated, but I forgot they do that stupid third-place game. But
it's not stupid.
That's another topic for another day. But we do have the stadium construction update that we got today from Rich McKay, and he seems to be telling everybody that June 1st is still the target date to open this thing up.
Yeah, which is obviously a good sign for all of us Atlanta United fans and I guess Falcons fans, because I guess there was a rumor that might be in trouble, at least the preseason. But the more disturbing news, at least the more instant freakout news, was the fact that he also says in that same tweet it's not necessarily a soccer game isn't necessarily going to open the stadium. So it doesn't mean that Atlanta United will be the first thing that plays in there, which I don't know if that really matters. It doesn't matter to me at all. I just want the games to happen in the stadium. But it does make you wonder why he would say that unless they have some. Jason Longshore said this in our little Slack chat, but it makes you wonder if maybe they're having some maybe opening concert ceremony, big deal thing. I don't know. Something crazy happening.
It's definitely going to be Outkast, right?
It's got to be, right?
I mean, you would hope so. I mean, I know that they're not touring or anything, but hey, you know, you can coax somebody out of a semi-retirement or whatever you want to call it if you throw in the right amount of money. So I'm sure that would be something that they looked at. But I think I agree with our man Jason Longshore there. It's probably going to be some sort of concert or something like that to get things opened up. And I'm fine with that. I don't care if Atlanta United's the first thing in the stadium. Atlanta United's going to be in the stadium. There's no threat to Atlanta United if somebody else, whether it's U2 or Taylor Swift or whatever, you know, opens up the new stadium. I mean, it's just not that big of a deal. So I'm just glad that it seems like June 1st is still the target to shoot for, and hopefully there are no more delays, because we've talked about this before. The more and more they start to delay this, the more it starts to look like they could be running into some problems.
The thing that really got me kind of concerned was the fact that they were still – the rumors we had heard was that, you know, like July 15th or something like that, and that would have pushed it another month, basically, like a month and a half, which is more games on the road, which at that point you got to start wondering how many games you're actually going to have at home, because I don't think – what you said this in the last podcast, and I don't know that you're wrong, because I don't – Sam, but I don't think that the backloading of home games is going to be as, you know, cut and dry as we all think it is. I think we're just going to spend a lot of time on the road that, you know, next season. We're going to have more home games, I think, in the second half of the season than everyone else does. I don't know if that's going to mean that we make up every single away game or, you know, what we would have had as a home game in the first half of the season or whatever until July 1st. In the second half, I think we're just gonna have to suck it up when it comes to that kind of stuff. But it did make me wonder if they did think that there was a problem with the start date or with the season at all, which in some cases had been the rumor. I was concerned that they were still taking season tickets and people were still buying and salesmen were still answering phone calls and making sales and all that stuff. And that's what worried me, because if you do that and all of a sudden, you know, the start of the season is in doubt, you are in some serious PR trouble, and that's not a way you want to start the franchise.
I know they won't give us any details on this, but I would love to know what the changes are that were ordered to the stadium a while back, that Longshore reported on and other outlets obviously reported on, because it seems to me, as technologically advanced as the stadium is going to be, like, it worries me that at the last minute you're still changing things when it feels like the plans for that stadium would have been so intricate that a change now means trouble, you know?
I wonder, because what I've heard is that there were design flaws, if you will, that you know, just – I don't want to give too much away, because I don't know if it's accurate or not. I just – I've heard these things from people with sources.
Hashtag sources.
Yeah, it's just people who know – who say they know people from, you know, from the construction team or whatever. And it's stuff that you can find on Facebook and stuff like that, but I wonder if that's – basically, I wonder if because of all those rumors, because of the concern of when the completion with the roof and all that stuff would eventually take place, I wonder if some of those changes cut the time. I wonder if that's why they made those changes.
So it's like not adding more stuff, but taking away.
I wonder if that's the case. I don't know. I have no idea. This is just me speculating. If I had an insider source and I could name them, I would, because I hate people that just say sources. But yeah, this is just me speculating. That's what I think may be the case.
We need to get HGTV on this, you know, like an HGTV special about the renovation of the Mercedes Stadium that went wrong and
what's that ID channel investigation, whatever the they usually stick to murders, but we can investigate this thing.
I'm just trying to do like a fixer upper Atlanta United edition, you know. That's what I'm trying to do.
Just wants to flip this stadium. HGTV. But yeah, you know, I think that when you're talking about a stadium of this level of grandeur, if you will, I mean, it's going to be one of the most technologically advanced stadiums in the world. Its design is one of the most unique designs we've seen on a stadium this big in the United States. So it was always going to be a difficult undertaking. And it just looks like, unfortunately, that some of the things that they were aiming for were either misplanned or they didn't really... It looked better on paper, I guess, than it did once they actually put the screws into the ground, so to speak. So, as long as they, you know, hit the reset button in time and get it right, then, you know,
I mean, we don't even know if that's the case. We're just speculating.
No, of course, yeah.
No, we want to make sure that's clear, that we have no insider knowledge. We're just bantering about what may be the problem or what
breaking news, guys. Mainly made of duct tape.
We have no idea what the actual story is.
Confirmed sources say made of duct tape.
Like, have you ever seen a duct tape wallet? Yeah, it's kind of like that.
Exactly. There you go.
On a much larger scale. So again,
Mercedes-Benz
like
Stadium equates to a duct tape wallet. That's what we're saying.
So, yeah, exactly.
Atlanta United FC, brought to you by Duck Dynasty.
Yeah, exactly. A billion plus dollar stadium just got compared to duct tape because it's June and we're trying to figure stuff out here. But yes, the stadium should be up in the time that they have said it's going to be up, at least after the initial delay. So let's just keep our fingers crossed with that. And obviously, Atlanta United's done such a great job in the community in their, I guess, you can't really call it infancy anymore, but it's still a very young club, doesn't even have a team yet. So they've done a very good job of getting out in the community. And one thing they did recently was this flag effort around the city of Atlanta. They put a bunch of flags everywhere for people to go get, and they even had like a golden ticket with some Copa America tickets attached to it. So they've been doing a bunch of great stuff, but unfortunately, one local shopping center wanted to play the role of the Grinch, and I'll let Eric dive further into that.
Yeah, so Lennox Mall, in their I guess their infinite wisdom, decided.
It's a great mall, by the way. Yeah. Fantastic mall.
Well, it's expensive, so.
And the ball sucks, Sam. Shut up.
Lennox Mall decided that they would, like you said, they'd play the Grinch and tear all their flags down. I don't know exactly where the flags were posted. I actually didn't go to Lennox Mall, but I say it's a little harsh. Maybe just gather them up and pass them around. I don't know. But it makes you wonder if Atlanta United didn't, or if the front office guys didn't call them and ask, or if they thought they could just post them up wherever. If they're posted literally on the mall, on the building itself, because I can't imagine they got in. Or maybe they did. I don't know. But if it's on or in the mall, then I can understand why Lennox Mall would be so peeved if permission wasn't asked. But if it's like in the parking lot or something like that, then I'd be like, okay, that's a little much.
Exactly.
It's a parking lot.
If they're just putting, flags up around, like phone poles and the parking lot and like MARTA stops around there or whatever, then yeah, I totally agree with you. It's definitely harsh for the mall to take all that stuff down. So unfortunately, Atlanta United hit a little bit of a speed bump there, but it seems like the rest of that flag thing went really, really well.
No, yeah, and I mean, they had them all throughout. They said Metro Atlanta. It was really just the Atlanta area. I think next one is tomorrow, Friday, whenever you listen to this, and they're going to do it in Gwinnett County, so we'll see how that goes, and hopefully that goes. Maybe they've learned their lesson. I mean, honestly, that's just an honest mistake if they just forgot to ask permission, or maybe they thought they had permission, or who knows. Maybe no one related to the security team. We'll see.
They probably just put it like all on the front door of the never going
to
work.
Yeah, I honestly bet that's the case. I bet someone didn't relate it to the security team. I can't tell you how often, just in radio, we go through that problem where people just don't let other people know about certain things.
So very much remote broadcasts and things like that. Yeah. I mean, somebody just forgot to let someone else know, like the boss of the restaurant or the bar or the store or wherever. You show up there with all the equipment, and they're like, yeah, I don't know who you are or what you're doing here. So, unfortunately, that does happen sometimes. But as Eric alluded to, Flag Friday in Gwinnett County on Friday, and according to Atlanta United's Twitter account, the map will release at 8 a.m. on Friday.
It was funny how quickly people were like, well, did they ask permission? Why aren't they in actual Metro Atlanta? Why are they? And I said, I'm like, dude, you're complaining about getting free stuff. Shut up. Shut up about getting free stuff.
I just want to know, like, where the worst places in a mall you could put a flag.
They're going out of their way to give you free stuff, and you're sitting there complaining. Just relax. Everyone freaking relax about things that they're passing out for free.
Ooh, dude, you got to watch out if those flags are near whatever mall Chinese restaurant is there, man, because That can be a smorgasbord of smells, if you will, and not just coming from the restaurant, but also from the patrons that eat there afterwards. So, like you were saying, you got to be very careful when you hang those flags around the mall. But I just think that this is a really good idea for them to continue to try new things to get themselves out there and really just put the brand out there more, because I'm sure that. Despite the fact that we're here and we're trying to scream it loud and proud from the mountaintops, I'm sure there's still a lot of the Atlanta community that is very unaware of what Atlanta United's been doing and very unaware of really Atlanta United in general.
I want an apology from Lennox Mall.
Yeah, I think we should. I think we should be the podcast and we should be the media outlet that sits here and slams our fists on the table and says, "Lennox Mall, we demand an apology."
Can we do that half jokingly and half seriously? Because I think if we can work it the right way, we can get, you know, them to host some kind of soccer specific themed event in the parking lot or something.
What we need is a hashtag.
Yes. Hashtag is where it starts. And then next thing you know,
where are our flags?
Next thing you know, we've got a soccer retail store inside the mall for free.
Yes. Hashtag where are our flags? Hashtag Lennox apology. Hashtag soccer in the streets at Lennox Mall. How about that? We're really just trying to help out here. So
there's got to be a better pun in there somewhere. Lennox and some flag related thing.
Oh, yeah. Or just something with Buckhead. There's a bunch of different stuff that you could use there. So I'm sure the Maladies will help us out with that. You can tweet us at MOTS Podcast and email MOTSpodcast@gmail.com. If you have any ideas on Lennox Mall hashtags, hashtag Lennox Grinch, just things like that.
Oh, yeah.
Lennox Grinch. That's funny.
So we'll continue to monitor that situation and see what happens there. You know, another thing with Atlanta United that's been in the news a lot lately are the rumors of possible designated players. And I think this is such a big issue that you have to warn people about, just in the sense that, look, obviously Andres Guardado and Hector Villalba are two that seem to have legs to them, actually. But then you have a story like a Nicholas Bentner come out that really only comes from one source and doesn't really have anybody else on it. And we talked to Darren Eels about this. You've got to be careful of agents and players using Atlanta United as you know, just trying to get money out of the clubs that they currently play for.
Who said that the other day? I'm trying to think who was the one who said that a few days ago. And I think it was in regards to Andres Guardado. I think he said it on TV. Anyone think, anyone remember?
What are you referring to exactly?
Him
maybe trying to get more money.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't remember. I think I know what you're talking about.
I think someone just speculated on whatever article they wrote. I think they just speculated. I think is where I saw it. But yeah, and what I think is interesting about the Guardado is that this is the third, over the course of the time that we've heard Guardado linked to Atlanta United, we've heard three different reports, granted from the same guy, who by Mexican standards is kind of viewed kind of, I don't want to say like a clown, but Mexican, you know, soccer fans don't really trust him 100%.
Yeah, I mean, John Sutcliffe is, you know, the guy who goes on ESPN in English and does all the reports on the Mexican soccer team in English. So, I mean, I can get why the Mexican viewing crowd, I guess, would be a little hesitant to refer to him as like a know-it-all Mexican soccer journalist.
But he seems like he's pretty confident in what he's hearing. And I've never seen one guy in the Mexican media go this hard on.
He's gone in.
I mean, he's put in most, if not all, of his chips into this basket. And if he's wrong, I'm never going to trust him again, because I don't think I've ever seen a reporter go this hard, a sports reporter at least, go this hard into a rumor and ultimately be wrong.
Well, I mean, he can, you know, Atlanta United doesn't have to sign Andres Guardado and he'd be wrong. I mean, you know, the interest.
You know what? That's true.
Yeah, I'm saying the interest from Atlanta United's end seems like it's concrete. But then there's the whole other thing about, is Andres Guardado using Atlanta United to get more money from PSV or maybe from somebody else? So that's something that I don't think Sutcliffe is reporting on. I think he's just saying, Atlanta United has genuine interest. And even Grant Wall expanded on it a little further in an article he wrote too. So, I mean, you know, with one guy going in on it, that's one thing. But then you get another guy like that, and it just makes it seem like the rumor actually has legs.
Well, remember that Guardado actually – I mean, Sutcliffe actually reported that he's been offered a contract, $6 million. Like, it's on his table apparently. Not literally, but it's – you know, it's in his possession. He can sign it whenever he wants. I guess he has to wait till for the transfer window to open. But the offer's been made, and I guess Atlanta United is at this point, based on what he said in his reports, just kind of waiting for a response right now.
And hopefully, it's a response that Atlanta United fans want to hear. At least, you know, I know I'm one that would love to see Andres Guardado as Atlanta United's first DP, or at least a DP. Maybe somebody else could fly in. I don't know. That's why they call it the silly season, just because really anything can happen. And look, of all the stuff that we've seen reported or rumors or whatever, I'm sure there's just as much stuff under the table. I mean, Atlanta United could come out tomorrow and sign and announce a DP signing that nobody saw coming. I mean, just because something's not out there doesn't mean that it's not happening.
If like your strategy is to win over sort of the like fan base of Eltree hanging out in and around the Atlanta area and in the South, is there a better player other than maybe say a Chicharito or a Tecatito you could sign better than Andres Guardado?
Well,
absolutely not.
Time out. Before or after Chile?
Yeah, no, that's yeah.
everybody has a bad day.
No, but if you go on Twitter, they are
getting all
sacrificing this team. They're already mad that they're not firing their head coach and or their manager and just the stuff they're saying to just Guardado specifically, because I've got a Guardado thing on my tweet deck, but just the things they're saying to him. Just nothing, no content, just insults. Just insults. Just straight insults. So,
I mean, that whole team played bad. I mean, Chile dissected them. I mean, there's no question about that. But that doesn't take away from the performances that Mexico had in the earlier games in the tournament. I mean,
no, yeah,
they looked like the best team or one of the best teams in the entire tournament.
So. Yeah, you know, and I mean, we don't have to dive deep into that, but you're right, Jason, that he would be one of the most perfect fits you could possibly imagine. Remember, we asked Darren Eales if he would bring someone in for marketing purposes, and I think the way he'd answer this, and I'm not gonna try my best English impression, but I think he'd basically say something like, "Yeah, he's one of the better players, we've seen available to Atlanta United, so we're gonna bring him in. The fact that he's gonna be a good marketing thing is perfect for us." It's a big plus.
It's one of those that you're killing two birds with one stone. There.
Yeah, he's looking at the player first and then the marketing aspect of it second. It's definitely a good thing, though. I mean, if you've seen these crowds at these Mexican games, it's freaking ridiculous.
Exactly. And I mean, you have to do it like that. You know, I think a lot of people look at sports a lot of the times and look at what a general manager or a technical director or president or whatever you want to call it does. And you know, you just have to look at it from the perspective of, look, it's not just about the on-field product. That should be and is the biggest part of it. But, yeah, if Atlanta United can sign a player that not only can contribute a lot on the field, but can also put some more butts in the seats, I mean, from a business perspective, it would be dumb not to pursue a guy like that.
Yeah.
In reality, like, the players you sign should put butts in the seats anyway. Like, if you're signing people that, like, nobody's going to want to come see, why are you signing that player to begin with?
Well, and this can transition us into the next rumor if we want to go into it, unless someone else has something on Guardado.
No, we're good.
But, you know, the other guy being linked to Atlanta United, Hector Villalba, I guess is how you pronounce it. Who knew him before, you know, his name? You heard his name linked to Atlanta United?
Not me.
He's a guy that after just watching one highlight video and highlight reel, and that's, again, I'll admit that it's just one, he looks perfect for MLS because he's really good at getting those cheap, like, weird MLS goals. It wasn't his entire highlight package. The dude is fast. And he's a good finisher, and I don't know what else you want out of a striker in MLS. You just want to be able to put it in the back of the net.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with a crap goal, man. Crap goals count just as much as regular goals.
But I mean, do you guys notice it happens a little more often in MLS than it does in any other league?
I don't think we do another type of goal, really.
Yeah, I mean, there are definitely a lot of dirt moments in MLS from certain goals that are scored. There's also plenty of very nice goals that are scored. Just look at what Diego Valeri does almost on a week-in, week-out basis, or what Sebastian Giovinco does. But, yeah, I mean, it's a league where sometimes the ball trickles into the net in funny ways, and if Hector Villalba can make the ball go in funny ways too, then climb on aboard, bud.
I mean, we can keep going back to it because it's such an awesome moment, but the first goal of MLS Cup last year was a slide tackle
exactly.
That a striker made on a goalie.
That's exactly the type of goal, the weird MLS-type goals that we see all the time. I think one of the cool things about him, though, is let me see if I can pull up the story we did on him real quick. But the club that he plays for now, I guess Boca Juniors he was going to go to Boca Juniors, and then I guess Boca Juniors wanted to wait till the end of the season. And then Villalba, knowing that his club, I wish I could remember the name of it, knowing that his club wouldn't get anything out of that, said, no, I want someone to pay the transfer fee so that my club here that I played for since I was 10 can get some money and get something back for me. It's him saying that, not the club, which is amazing. I've never heard of a player. I mean, think of the trades that happen like that in baseball or I guess not so much in the NFL, but you know what I'm saying? Like, you don't ever see that out of an athlete.
Oh, no.
Or you rarely see that out of an athlete.
Yeah, so that's a very good thing to see. And this past season in the Argentinian League for San Lorenzo, he scored...
That's what it was, San Lorenzo.
...goals in 27 appearances.
So how many goals?
Six.
Six.
Yes, so six goals in the league. And that's a pretty good haul for you know, a winger that's only 21 years old.
How many assists?
It does not say that here. I'd have to go dive further, but I can do that. But I'd have to dive a little further.
The rumor with Villalba is that he has been offered a deal. Let me see. It's been confirmed he won't go to Boca Juniors. It's been confirmed he's basically out of San Lorenzo, or his contract ends after this season, and I guess they can't pay whatever he's asking. And one of the teams that keeps being mentioned is Atlanta United. I also think it's funny on the Sutcliffe rumors is that he continues to say Atlanta FC. Instead of Atlanta United, just continues to say Atlanta FC.
Well, you know, he'll get it right eventually, I guess. Three assists, by the way, in the 2015-16 Primera División de Argentina season. And so far on the 2016-17 campaign, he has played in four games and recorded three shots. No goals, no assists. So that's what we got with Hector Villalba. And, hey, look, like we've talked about, man, with transfers, with the team getting closer and closer and closer to, you know, hiring a coach and doing all this stuff, this is all going to start to happen pretty fast. So all we can tell you is just buckle in, because
when's the
news is going to be coming down much more frequently in the coming months.
When's the transfer window? July 4th, I think.
Is it the 4th? I thought it was just like 1st through the end of August.
I gotta look. I think it was some weird. I think it was like the Monday, which would be the 4th.
Okay, well, that makes sense.
We should really look this up before we start.
Well, you know, I mean, it kind of popped up there organically. I mean,
yeah,
I mean, you should just produce content for the podcast by like talking about pieces you're about to look up.
I'm trying to say, let me see if I can find it real quick, because we did a story.
The 2016 summer transfer window opened. Oh, this is for Premier League clubs. It opened on June 9th.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure it's July 4th. I think it goes all the way to August 4th.
August 31st.
I love that the American League opens its transfer window on July 4th.
Yeah, right?
It's like, nothing in England exists for us until July 4th, and then it's real.
You got that right. but yeah, I mean, like we're saying, when the transfer window is open, this is going to be the time to pay attention to this, because it won't, after August 31st, it doesn't open back up until January. So if Atlanta United is going to sign players, it's either going to happen in the next 2 months, or it's going to happen in January. And when I say sign players, I mean players from Europe in that regard. So if they're going to go after those guys, it'll be either coming up real soon here, or you got to wait till January.
Hold on. I found the article we did, and it was Matthew Edmonston. I can never get his name right. yeah, July 4th to August 3rd, and basically means –
Wow, so that's a very small.
That's going to be
yeah.
Lit.
So it's going to be a crazy month, because if they if they don't sign, if they don't sign players in that window, they can't sign anyone until February, because it has to be when the league's transfer window opens. It's not when like Europe's transfer window is.
Okay, so it's a little bit different, yeah, because Europe's transfer window is much bigger. Probably because those deals get super, super complicated, and they always end up dragging
now,
out. I mean,
yeah. Now, just because I say that, I'd have to research a little more. But what it's saying, what Matthew said, is basically that if you're gonna, all the players that you're trying to grab from Europe are probably gonna be there in the summer, since clubs are willing to part with players in their own transfer windows. rather than, I guess, out of transfer window. I don't know if they can even can, but what I heard was that what was the way it worked is that it had to be MLS's transfer window opening.
So basically, if we I don't know if we're going to tease this yet, but if we might perhaps be taking a road trip together, guys, over the 4th of July weekend, if that might happen, we could get potential huge breaking news during our time there.
We could be doing a podcast on the road as we're driving.
Correct, because the Charleston Battery will be taking on Rangers FC from Scotland on July 6th. And we are in the midst of working out all the finer details of this. But, yeah, it looks like we will be joining our Charleston reporter extraordinaire, Seamus Grady, who you can also catch with Eric on the Chucktown Check-In.
Seamus.
Exactly. We'll be joining Seamus, and actually, I guess he'll be joining us for a special edition of the podcast from up there. So, again, we are working out all the finer details of this, but yeah, it's going to be very fun. I am very much looking forward to heading to Charleston, a town that is really awesome and a town that I really like, and checking out the Battery taking on Rangers. It should be an exciting evening for sure.
I'm excited. I'm excited to check out. I just want to go to a Battery game. I mean, whether it's here or the one that ends up being at the Silverbacks Park, I'm excited just to see them. I'm excited to see the guys that we think may be in camp once 2017 rolls around. And, of course, I'm excited to see that atmosphere that's famous for being just rampant during Battery matches.
Oh, yeah. So we're definitely looking forward to taking the pod on the road, if you will. And heading up to Chucktown, so definitely looking forward to that. And
I call Seamus's couch. That's all I'm gonna say.
Okay. You can take the couch. Like I said, I'm totally down with sleeping on the floor, man. I've done it before. I'll do it again. So we'll figure all that stuff out for sure. But I guess that's really unless either of you guys got anything else to drop on this podcast Sunday. It looks like we've put the cherry on top, have we?
No. Because we got to talk about the Battery coming to Atlanta to play the U23 Nigeria team.
The poor Silverbacks.
Silverbacks going.
I'm glad you reminded me too, because this is going to be a very good portion of the podcast.
Silverbacks going cray cray because Charleston is playing in their park.
Yeah, the guys who are really hardcore Silverbacks fans and Silverbacks trust and all that stuff. Let's just say Silverbacks Twitter got pretty angry with
not just Silverback's Twitter, but it was like non-league USA, that Twitter account, and Ted was part of the
Ted getting involved was
Ted
my favorite
got involved
part of that whole discussion.
I was like, oh my gosh, goodness, this is blown out of proportion.
Yeah, Ted definitely dropped in there as well, and I think, you know, the Silverbacks, even the team themselves, might have felt a little slighted because they even tweeted something out earlier today about how, you know, the chance to play Nigeria and, you know, stay here for more details. And it's like, oh, brother. It's like
they teased
the Nigerian
news.
Federation, and we're like, hey, what about us?
No, and here's the thing. If you're a Silverbacks fan supporter right now, cover your ears because you're not going to like this. I don't care what you say, what you think, what you present as evidence. You are not going to outsell a battery match versus the U23s of the Nigeria, because from what we've heard rumors more than anything else, is that some of the Atlanta
Hashtag
United
sources.
Yeah. Some of the Atlanta United Academy guys may be playing in that game. We'll definitely see Tam Backus. I think by that point we'll see O2. Again, we'll see, you know, maybe for us the second time, some of the guys like Romario Williams, Justin Portillo, Sean Ferguson, some of the guys on that Battery team that may make that may open up 2017 in the Atlanta United camp. I'm not saying they make the team. I'm just saying they're going to be there training, maybe trying to make the team. So there's going to be a lot of, you know, hoopla around that game. Along with the fact that, depending on what his schedule is, you might see Andrew Carlton there. You might see some other youth U.S. national team guys. I can't say for sure because I don't know, but that is the rumor. That there is a possibility that could happen. It's not out of that realm. So that in itself is going to draw a lot of Atlanta United fans. On top of that, you've got a very large Nigerian community or African soccer community in Atlanta. And for them to go see Nigeria, do you remember when they came for the Olympics?
Of course. In Athens? The final when they beat Argentina.
So was I.
At Stanford Stadium.
That stadium was packed.
It was huge. There's so many people there. So, yeah, I mean, I totally agree with you. There is a huge, African soccer population in Atlanta, and of course they're going to want to have the chance to go see their guys play. So, yeah, I definitely think that you're hitting the nail on the head there with the fact that, look, the Charleston Battery game against Nigeria would outdraw the Silverbacks one. It just would Atlanta United is going to pimp the crap out of it.
They sell – go ahead.
Also, by the way, just, a further marketing ploy. The Nigeria U-23s are called the Golden Eaglets, I believe.
Which
is just so damn cute that how could you not go watch a game for a team called the Golden Eaglets? Plus, I'm pretty sure Will Parchman of Top Drawer Soccer has said on Twitter that like the Nigerian U-23s could beat most men's national teams.
They're
out
pretty
there.
Damn good.
They tend to just be lit as far as Galazzos are concerned.
Yeah, there was talk about, especially from the Silverbacks fans, why don't they play in Charleston? Well, that's because they're specifically coming to Atlanta because it's close to the airport, because they want to train before going to Brazil. So that makes sense from that standpoint. You can't – I don't even know if you can take a direct flight from Africa or from Nigeria to Charleston.
Doubtful. I've been to the Charleston airport many times.
I could be wrong. I could be wrong about that, but I don't know. And on top of that, you want to play a competitive team. I'm sorry, Silverbacks fans. Your team is not up to snuff when it comes to playing and trying to test and trying to warm up the U-23 Nigeria team. So, sorry. It's not in the cards. This game that they're promising, I am willing to bet, is going to be some very small, like, scrimmage. Like, there might not even be refs. That's what I'm willing to bet. On top of that, the Silverbacks the team itself does not own the park. Boris still owns the park. He still does the adult leagues. He still makes a lot of money renting out the fields and stuff like that. He owns it. I guarantee you he was the one that was behind all this, not the Silverbacks. It wouldn't even surprise me if the Silverbacks didn't even know.
That's very true. So,
going hard on the Silverbacks because they've been going hard on me for the last couple of days. So
they have. And look, we're not here to just sit here and, troll the Silverbacks, but we are here to be realists. And the reality of the situation is that a team full of possible Atlanta United players and players that Atlanta United have already signed in Tom Bakis and, like you said, maybe even Andrew Carlton. It's just not a contest because the groundswell of excitement for Atlanta United has already reached such a high point. And the fact to actually see some of these players play in Atlanta, I think, of course, that game's gonna the Charleston game's gonna draw huge numbers there for Silverbacks Park. Is that what they still call it?
Yeah, I think it's Silverbacks Park. And I'll just say this, and I said it on Twitter a couple times, but the Silverbacks should really be using this as an opportunity to sell their club. Instead of complaining on Twitter and complaining about, whose park it is and the fact that Atlanta United is taking over, whatever complaint you want to make, stop. Use this as an opportunity to sell your club, to market your club, because your owner won't do it and didn't do it. And that's 75% of the reason that you are in the NPSL as it is right now. So do yourself a favor and market your club. You're going to have a million families there. Pass out flyers. Pass out whatever, schedules. I know that the season's going to be over by that time, but find something to sell your club because people are going to be there just looking. There are a lot of people that, believe it or not, I know that in your world you probably thought that everyone knew about the Silverbacks. There are a lot of people in Metro Atlanta that did not know the Silverbacks existed. And they pass by that park every day, going on 285, going down 85, going to work. And they did not know Silverbacks existed. Take this time. Take the exposure that it will have on the park. If this game ends up being more than just a scrimmage between whatever this news is that the Silverbacks are going to announce, make that an opportunity to sell your club. Stop complaining about what the situation is. You're not going to change it.
Yeah, I totally
believe it or not, the people that make the decisions and money care about the money that they make. And the Silverbacks aren't making money. That's why you had to lower yourselves. It wasn't about you know, Atlanta United coming in, it was that there was just no interest anymore because you guys weren't marketing your own team. Sorry, I'm going to get off that soapbox now.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I'm going to have some angry tweets later.
It's definitely made you very upset.
They were on me all week, man. And I was like, I want to be a fan of your club. You guys won't let me.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, all we're trying to do is like, hey, can we come to the Silverbacks game? No. If you come, we're going to throw flares at you. And they didn't actually.
It's not even that. They think that my I've never told someone that their fandom is however they support their team is the wrong way to support their team. I think as a culture, we might do some things differently. I wish we could do some things differently. But, you know, I'm never going to discourage someone from supporting the way they want to support. But, my gosh,
there's some Russian fans.
They
love – well, I'm a support team.
And that's where I say as a culture. Because there's things that I would – yeah, I'd probably turn that off if I were a Russian.
Literally turn off flares. Yeah. Or that's Croatian, but still, both of you.
But there are things that I think American sports fans in general, as a whole, not just soccer fans, but sports fans, that things that we do that I think, like, okay, we can do more of this, do less of that. And so, but I'm never going to tell someone, yeah, you support your club the wrong way. That's all that these guys do.
Yeah.
But that's a tangent. I'm excited for Battery versus the Nigerian U23 team. I'm excited to see.
I'm so dejected coming down on that. I'm excited, whatever.
I'm excited to see. I'm excited to see Tambakis. I'm excited to see O2. I'm excited to see Marini if he makes the trip. Ferguson. Who's the other one? Mueller. Oh, Disnell Cooper. If he can sort himself out when it comes to his citizenship, I guess, or your immigration status, he'd be a good keeper to try to pick up. And he's like a legend over there with the Battery.
And then, hey, maybe Atlanta United could sign that sweet Hungarian keeper to a deal, too.
Oh, yeah.
There you go.
That guy.
Everything would come together perfectly.
Or anyone on Iceland's team, please.
That, too, indeed. So,
can I just sidebar for a second? I was listening to SiriusXM Radio, and it was English media. It sounded like they were outside at some pub or something like that. And they were talking about how they were already talking past Iceland and Ireland for both England and France. They were talking about the England-France matchup.
Dude.
That isn't even scheduled yet.
I was going to say, I don't know as much about the Iceland-England matchup. I think England is pretty much an enigma of a team at this point just because they have a bunch of good young players, but there's not really that substance there. But France better watch out. Look, I know that France is a very good team, and they're one of the favorites, if not the favorite, to win this tournament. But you think those Ireland players aren't remembering what happened in 2009,
yes,
man, when they got screwed out of the World Cup?
Not only that, but look at just the – I don't want to say luck, but look at the way they're playing and how scrappy they've been getting it together. They remind me of, like, those Cinderella teams in March Madness. I mean, that's those are the teams you don't want to overlook, and that's exactly what they're doing.
No, I'd at least grant you that, like, maybe France has more of a reason to say that because France is loaded, but England has a history of crap in its pants in moments like this. Dang, no, why on earth would you be tempting fate right now, Englishman? Come on.
I mean, you realize that if this England-Iceland game goes to penalties, that there is absolutely 0% chance
glorious
England gets through at that point.
I feel like Thor would just come back to Earth incarnate at that moment.
He would come in and assume the body of their goalkeeper.
Oh, yeah.
It was amazing. The things they were saying about the future potential not-set-in-stone matchup between England and France, you'd be thinking the games between Ireland and Iceland were already played. Like, they were in their minds, they were already in the next round.
The English are obsessed with the French and vice versa. I mean, there's a reason when you take the channel from Paris to England – the station you roll into in London is Waterloo Station. I mean, they did that on purpose. So
yep.
the two countries have been obsessed with each other since the times of Napoleon. So I can see why they would look past it. But again, look past it at your own peril, because Iceland and Ireland are both two teams that they ain't ready to go home, man.
Yep.
Before we wrap up, I'd just like to point out one thing. Just to give you fellow Mouthies out there, I just want to humble myself before you. I picked Belgium to win the tournament, which looks a little better now, but I also picked Harry Kane to win the Golden Boot. He has no goals, and Austria to be the dark horse, and they got no points. So, just letting y'all know, I humble myself before you. Oh, and my Golden Boot for Copa America was Luis Suarez. He didn't even see the field, so.
So
doing great.
He really
great
wanted to,
here.
Though. He really wanted to.
Yeah, I picked Kun Aguero for the Golden Boot, and I don't – has he scored yet? I don't think so.
Has he seen the field? Has he been in the game? No, he has.
I don't even know if he's played. It's been such a weird tournament, man.
I know.
Just in terms of, like, you know, Luis Suarez throwing temper tantrum on the sideline and Ecuador's goal not counting, and then Brazil having that thing happen to them against Peru. I mean
– And then Mexico laying an egg against Chile.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was epically awesome.
No question about it. It's been a weird tournament, but
if you want U.S. if you want U.S. men's national team coverage, go listen to the live podcasts we had at different restaurants over the course of the Copa America.
If you want to, you know, I'm sure we'll think of something. But if you want to watch that third place game on Saturday, you can do that. I just find that it's a waste. It is absurd to be playing third place games in these tournaments. Why do you think the NCAA tournament did away with this in basketball? Just because none of the players actually wanted to be there doing it. So I've always been vehemently opposed to third place games, but I still hope the United States beats Colombia and gets some measure of revenge.
I'm okay with it, especially because it's against Colombia, a team that you lost to. So you want to measure up after once the turn, you know, basically the tournament's over now. So you want to see how well you could do now against a team that beat you to open up the tournament.
See, but you realize Klinsmann still ain't going to start Nagby.
That's fine. I'm actually very excited about the fact that he has been consistent. It looks like we have – Argentina was the anomaly, but it looks like we have a plan, some kind of set mental, this is how I want us to play now, and so we're going to just add the pieces where they lie. I mean, it's clear now that Bobby Wood is – at least I think it's clear that Bobby Wood should and will be the starter moving forward up top, behind Clint Dempsey until someone else that can fill Clint Dempsey's role comes in. Bradley, as much as I'm so done with Bradley.
You're not the only one.
Player. Yeah, no. But I've said that before. Like, this is not the first time I've said that. You know, he's clearly number six. You've got the back line more or less figured out. If you can find a way to, you know, get Fabian Johnson up in his natural position. But the center back pairing, it looks like you're good to go. Yedlin at right back. I mean, you're starting to see some semblance of structure. And I was telling someone on Twitter earlier today, it's like, I think all the madness that we saw for the past year and a half or whatever it is now, you're going to see the end result of that madness. So you're going to see the finish line in terms of not seeing so much madness anymore. But you know what? Klinsmann, he could throw out a complete. You know what? Honestly, after saying all that, he probably throws out Nagby and Pulisic to start the game, knowing that it doesn't matter. And you know, an entirely new four-back line. He plays Fabian Johnson in the middle, and I don't know. He
plays like a 4-4-1 or something.
Wando, and Beckerman atop. I don't know. He'll do something.
2-5-3-2.
Yeah.
But hey, look, it doesn't really matter because this is going to be Klinsmann's last game in charge anyway.
I was just about to drop that joke.
You know, it really doesn't matter. I saw that today, and that one bookmaker like made Klinsmann the favorite to get the job, and I'm like, I mean, if Southampton wants to do that, I don't know if I'd be opposed, but at the same time, I kind of feel like we've been on this ride for so long, you know, and obviously they've signed him through the 2018 World Cup. It's like, I kind of want to see how this ends.
Whoever that bookmaker was, I bet that was an intern. That's a summer intern looking to make a splash.
Knowing how gambling works, all that means is just a ton of people threw money on him. Nobody's heard anything. That just means a bunch of sharks or, you know, just random gamblers said, it's going to be Jurgen Klinsmann and bet a bunch of money.
And maybe ask them, it's like, hey, did y'all go over to England and just throw a bunch of money?
I saw that and I was like, what? Who in their right mind? I mean, it sounded like, yeah, sure, one bad game was against Argentina, but the tournament as a whole has been kind of a success. As much as we hated that game against Argentina, you know, you showed up against Costa Rica, you showed up against Paraguay, and
Costa Rica game still was not as impressive as the
right. But Paraguay and Ecuador, that was
those are good matches.
To me, that was okay.
I mean, Ecuador's a really good team. Ecuador's like a top 15 team in the world.
That was two. Those were two games where I was like, okay, it looks like we're improving is what I got out of that game. Argentina obviously was a different story, but you know. That was I've told everyone around the radio station who doesn't like soccer, and they you know, watching them talk about soccer on the radio or tweet about soccer is the funniest thing in the world, because if you know anything about soccer, you know that scholarship money does nothing for developing soccer talent. So if you ever hear someone mention, well, we need to get the colleges into this a little better and give out scholarship money and full ride and stuff like that for soccer player. No, that's not how you do it. You go just look at England and you know, use that as a reference. But listening to, I had to try to find a way to explain, you know, what it was going up against Argentina. So the best way I could do it was, we are one of the better teams. We're like top two, top three, usually top two of like a mid-major football program. If you could categorize all the mid-major football programs, we'd be right at the top.
USA's App State. They're a team.
Because I'm not even thinking that low. I'm thinking like middle of the pack, good. You know,
like Wisconsin in the Big Ten.
Yeah, exactly. We're like,
I thought you were going like mid-major conference.
No.
You go basketball, we're like, I don't know, VCU or something.
See, I think Wisconsin might be too high, but I said something like we're a good, really, really, really good Division II team that could beat most.
What about like Boise?
You know, sure, but what I mean is that we're a really good Division II team in the sense that we can go and play the mid-majors and you know, we win most often than not.
Right.
Now, when we go up against the big boys, like say in Ohio State, which I equated to Argentina, we're obviously going to get spanked around.
Right.
So we're going to look exactly like we are against those big boy teams, and we're going to look really good against the teams that we normally play against. And that's
Hashtag stick to soccer, guys.
Yeah,
come
no
on.
Kidding.
What are we doing here?
Shut up, Jason.
Well, no, and that's what I immediately said. Like, look, you don't understand the sport. You don't understand the culture behind the sport. Something you don't understand how it's played. You don't understand the culture and the dynamics behind what it means to develop a team, what it means to develop a player, what it means to go up against, you know, the fact that – and we kind of missed the Colin Cowherd thing, but – the fact that some of the guys that are talking about soccer here at in the radio station I work at don't know that the guys coming off the bench for Argentina are some of the better players in the EPL.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, that alone, the fact that they don't know that says a lot about how their understanding of the game, of how it's developed here, and where the U.S. men's national team is at right now. But hopefully that's going to be changing in the near future, at least developing better. As I will say this, I think for sure we need to schedule more games and more tournaments like the one we played in today. I think that I'm not saying we need to go crazy with, you know, scheduling, you know, Brazil or Spain or for friendlies. But I think that, you know how you have like, it's usually groups of two, these friendlies. Mm-hmm. I think one of them needs to be a relatively tough team, a team that you can really, you know, that it's that you're going, it's an uphill battle for you. Because you're naturally going to get enough games playing in CONCACAF where you can, as we saw in this round of World Cup qualifiers, you can kind of mess around and try things. So I'm not worried about working on things during World Cup qualifiers because we usually make it anyway. And the teams aren't good enough to for us not to be able to do that. But if you play if you schedule a Belgium or a Spain or I don't know, even England or any of the European teams that, you know, would be a tough, tough challenge, something you could really test your formation, your skill, your, you know, everything that you've been working towards in preparation for a World Cup, that to me would be great. I think more of these type of, I don't know if Argentina is the team we want to schedule a friendly for, but you get what I'm saying.
Well, I'd be fine if we never scheduled a friendly against a CONCACAF team ever again.
Yeah, no, like, I'm the same way.
All the friggin' time. Stop playing Guatemala or Costa Rica in friendlies. There's no point in doing that. You're going to play those teams anyway.
But you got to get ready to play them when it matters.
Okay, yeah, so that's what I'm saying. Schedule one.
Play them against better teams.
Schedule one. Don't schedule both friendlies for you know, some CONCACAF team.
Yeah, agreed.
No, I'm right there with you on that.
So, only reason I'd say keep the CONCACAF friendlies is because CONCACAF soccer is it's dirty shiv knife fight in an alley. Whereas European friendlies are like, we're actually trying to play something beautiful. CONCACAF, we're just trying not to get studs up on people.
That's a good point. No, you do raise a good point there. So I guess you have to be ready for that style.
Everyone's talked about how we're lacking in development and all that stuff. And that's very true. And we're still years away from, you know, being able to take a youth player pool and develop into a world class national team. But the way we can do something about it now is getting practice and building up our resume, if you will, against, you know, the top teams in the world. So that when we get into those World Cups, we're not seeing Belgium for the first time. We're not seeing Argentina for the first time. We're not seeing these top teams for the first time in what seems like forever. That way we know what we're going up against. We know what we have to do. We know how we have to play. And we're not surprised when all of a sudden, you know, Michael Bradley's getting the ball at midfield and all of a sudden he's being rushed by two players because they know he's going to he's capable of the bad pass every now and then. More often than not, it's
and look,
a bad pass.
We've seen this for a long time now. The United States is a team that's capable every once in a while of shocking the world. I mean, obviously, you go back to the 2002 World Cup, the wins over Portugal and Mexico and playing Germany as tight as they did. You can go to the Confederations Cup in 2009 where they beat Spain and had Brazil on the ropes. I mean, this team is capable of playing up to the level of the competition they're playing against, but they're much more capable of doing that when they're playing the sort of counterattacking, absorb and strike type soccer. And unfortunately, it seems like Klinsmann's trying to change the U.S. into more of a possession style just hasn't worked. And it seems like he's even gone back a little and reverted to realizing what the U.S. is. So if they can continue to get better with those type of players that can play in that kind of system and Klinsmann would actually stick to it, I think that would benefit the U.S. much more than trying to go head-to-head possession style with Argentina, because that just isn't going to happen.
I think you got to be able to play both. So against CONCACAF teams that you know you're going to dominate when it comes to the possession, then fine, possess. Work on that. Work on being able to do that and hone that skill. But when you know you're going up against a team, you know, a top level, a top world-class team, you got to know that you're not going to be able to just possess the ball on a team like that that knows how to defend off the ball, that knows how to really limit what your space, and that ultimately you're the one that's going to have to counter. Learn how to do that as well. You can't just stick to one system. Not when the players you have in your player pool have a specific skill set, and it's not up to par with, you know, the rest of the world. And it's not saying that we can't beat these teams ever, but it is saying that you have to. I mean, come on. Who thought Ireland would have beat Italy the other day? Who thought Iceland would advance as far as they did? It's because they're playing a certain way.
Yeah, so they've figured out what the best way for them to play is, and that's what makes sense for them. And I think the United States should know what the best way for them to play is. And you're right in that the style of play might change depending on who they're playing against. But, yeah, in terms of these big-time, high-profile games where the other team just has more talent than you, sometimes you just have to figure out other ways to try and get those wins. And hopefully Jurgen Klinsmann has realized that in this tournament, and hopefully he realized it after the Argentina game, because that definitely should have been a little bit of a wake-up call in a sense that, hey, we played well against some teams in this tournament, but when it came to one of the Titans, the U.S. can learn from that and move forward. But, like I said, they're a team that can knock off some of the big boys every once in a while, but they're a team that also needs to know who they are. And right now they're still just – it's not there. It's going to take years and years of – great academy development, and this was not something that Jurgen Klinsmann was going to be able to do overnight. And I think already under him, in terms of the technical director aspect, a lot of that stuff has gotten better in terms of the youth development and things like that. But still a long way to go, and it takes a while for those players to develop. So you do have to be a little bit patient. But at the same time, in terms of the senior national team, you've got to hope that some of the results can get a little better.
I'm really glad that these big questions about youth development are not necessarily something that Atlanta United fans have to worry about. We can just go buy people if we need to.
Right now.
Right now,
right
yeah.
Right now. Hopefully that's not the long-term plan, but, you know, it's also a different, you know, MLS is a different animal altogether.
Just win, baby. Just win.
Yeah, exactly. Just win, baby. That'll wrap things up for us here on the Mouths of the South podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We are brought to you by DirtySouthSoccer.com, the Atlanta United and Atlanta Soccer page for SB Nation. You can follow on Twitter at DirtySouthSoc, SOC. You can follow us on Twitter at MOTS Podcast. Email us, MOTSPodcast@gmail.com. I'm at Sam J. Franco. Eric's at Eric Quintana 47. And Jason is at Jason is the Smith. We look forward to bringing you much more content as the summer rolls.
Can I add one more thing?
Go right ahead.
Don't listen to anything Colin Cowherd ever has to say about soccer. That's it. I'm done.
Or anything, really.
Or Jason Whitlock, or any of those breathing out of their mouths 24 hours a day personalities that are on Fox. I really wish ESPN
Shots
could...
Shots fired.
I really wish...
Supposed to be quick, guys. It was the last thing. Supposed to be quick.
You're the one that opened the box.
That's why it was supposed to be quick.
You're the one that opened the box. All I'll say is that I wish ESPN had the World Cup back, but again, that's another story for another day. So that's all the time we have for you today. We'll be back very soon. Looking forward to heading up to Charleston and all that good stuff we got going on. So, guys, thank you for listening. And Atlanta, we will talk to you again soon.
Deuces.
See ya.